We're checking in on academics this fall in the Eau Claire Area School District. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The district announced in recent days it will postpone all fall sports, offer them in the spring. Academics, it's a rolling blend approach, combining in-person, virtual instruction as well. So we're going to sort through the plan. How will your child's fall coursework be delivered? Are you on board with it? What questions do you have for a superintendent? What message do you want to convey about instruction? We're at 800-642-1234. Mike Johnson is superintendent of Eau Claire Area School District. Superintendent Johnson, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, school starts in 2 weeks, September 1st. What is the plan for Eau Claire?
It's coming upon us pretty quickly. First off, we've got our new staff in this week, and we'll be having all staff next week. So we really need to make sure that we're doing all we can for our staff to prepare for the students, not just academically, but socially and emotionally, and obviously with a huge safety focus this year. We're operating a blended model, and probably 80 to 81% of our students are in that blended model where in most grades, K and then 3 through 12, students will attend school 2 days a week in a cohort, and they will be learning virtually the other 3 days of the week. We have about 18% of our students who have chosen a 100% virtual model, where they will be learning the curriculum and the activities through our learning management system of Canvas with Eau Claire Area School District teachers.
So 4 out of 5 students, though, roughly, are going to have some in-person instruction in Eau Claire this fall.
That is correct.
What did you take into consideration in order to prepare this plan?
Well, quite frankly, we've been working on this plan since May. We had a task force of reopening schools, and initially we had around 100 stakeholders from throughout the district and community participate. That has grown to about 225, 230, which has been extremely helpful. When I started in this position on July 1st, I was very impressed with the work that was done. But first, in probably what was most key was probably late June to early July, we had distributed a survey to families and staff about their preferences for the school year, but also we work very closely in concert with the Eau Claire City County Health Department as well. So that survey data really had shown us what was very important to our families, and 90% of them wanted either a daily face-to-face communication and teaching model with students, and probably 50% had chosen that, and about 38 to 39% had chosen a blended hybrid model. So close to 90% of our families wanted some type of in-person. So after that, we had gone to developing our plan, checking with every step of the way with our Eau Claire City County Health Department. And on July 20th, our board had approved that model for us to go forward with the blended model. And really, since then, it's been a lot of work, receiving a lot of questions from staff and from families and even from some students as well. And every board meeting we have, we update the public and the board and our families on this. We have frequently asked questions pages. But last night we had a board meeting and we thought it went very well, but we still have more questions and more things to iron out for our staff and for our students and families.
As you iron out how fall will be delivered, you're talking about a cohort here of students who will be having 2 days a week in-person instruction in their schools in Eau Claire. What does this cohort look like? How many students? How do they function?
Well, what we had done... We had in late July, we opened up a survey for approximately 12 days to give families that information, to gain more information from the district on which mode they would choose for their family. And we gave them a deadline of August 5th. So then we've got to be able to staff, and we also need to transport our students as well. So with all that data, on the 5th, or actually on the 6th, the very early morning of the 6th, our HR department started placing those students, and we were able to staff. And at the elementary level, we're complete right now. Middle school, we're just about complete. In high school, That's a very delicate schedule, obviously, with a lot of options. We want to give our families so many options. But what we had done is we had taken those, and those will come out this week. We had formed those cohorts based on street number. We've got blended families living together, different last names. So we thought that would be the best thing to do. So we have those evened out, and they will be shared with families this week.
How many students in a cohort?
Because of our restrictions and our orders here in Eau Claire County, with 6 feet of social distancing, we are wearing masks as well. You know what? Every cohort probably based on the square footage of that room, anywhere from 11 or 12 to maybe up to 14. That seems to be the norm as we've looked at every room, every learning area in our entire district.
Talking with Mike Johnson, superintendent of the Eau Claire Area School District, we're finding out how his district is delivering education this fall. Taking your questions as well, parents, how is your child's school planning on returning in the fall? Will it be like Eau Claire setup, a mix of virtual learning and in-person days? Join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. So what will busing look like? How are you going to work transportation?
Our student transit company, led by Jim Fai, he's our transportation director and the owner of the company. Ever since I started on July 1st, I've been able to meet with him. He's provided us updates. He's part of our leadership team, and he's been working very closely with Eau Claire City County Health to determine how many students we can serve on the bus at one time. Very early, it was lower numbers of students, anywhere from 10 to 12. We've been able to, with mitigating risk with masks and other requirements, we've been able to increase that. But, in working closely with our survey that we had done, where some families opted out of transportation, they felt, you know what, we don't need it. We can take ourselves off. And we were really appreciate the attention those parents had given. Jim and his staff have been able to, and we were able to report this last night, we're very comfortable that we'll be able to deliver transportation to every student who needs it in our entire district.
How will masks work? Will students be required to wear masks?
Yes, they will. They will be required to wear masks, and we had just altered our rule, our procedure for this last night with our board as well as staff. What we had done is we probably came out a little bit earlier, maybe 2-3 days earlier than the governor on this, just because we felt this was important. We listened to our public, we listened to our staff, and we listened to our Eau Claire City County Health Department, and that was the best thing. Not only the 6 feet of social distancing, but mask use. And so what we've done is in concert with our legal counsel, as well as bringing this up to principals, because they're truly the ones who have to implement these policies and procedures. And you can have the best policy and procedure, but if we're not able to implement or follow through with those expectations and do it consistently, it's not worth much. So we really needed to ask them for their feedback. And I think we have that consensus on how we want to handle certain types of masks, no bandanas. What happens if there are certain types of neck coverings? And it's really been interesting to listen to our public and to read the research. And anyway, that's what we're going to be doing with masks.
Superintendent Mike Johnson is giving us the details on how the Eau Claire Area School District will deliver instruction this fall. Teachers, how are you adapting to a remote classroom? What resources have you found valuable? Where did you struggle to keep students' attention last spring with the abrupt switch to remote learning? And students, what's on your mind as the school year draws near? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the head of the Eau Claire Area School District here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a district that has more than 11,000 students. Instruction this fall, as we've been learning, will be a mix of in-person and remote, with families having the option to go all virtual. Superintendent Mike Johnson is new in his position. He started last month. What questions do you have for him? What do you want to convey to superintendents about instruction this fall amid the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234, and Superintendent Mike Johnson stays with us for 10 more minutes. So what happens if there is a positive case or an outbreak at one of your schools among students or staff? What is the protocol?
Absolutely. First of all, I think an example would be our health department would become aware of a positive case from a healthcare provider in the community. And then the health department in the city and county interviews a person to ask about who they may be they have been in contact with, including family, or if it's an adult coworkers or others. And if there are additional contacts at the school, the health department staff would work with our school to get names of students who are in the area, seating charts, and contact information for those people. And then the health department staff, not our district staff, will then notify the close contacts and give guidelines for quarantine. The health department staff is so critical because they know exactly how to interview. They've been trained for this, and our school staff is not able to do that. We've learned that one case or one interview can take as few as 20 minutes, but up to an hour. And we just don't simply have the time, resources, or training to do that. But student and staff safety is definitely our highest priority. And, we have so many safety measures in place, like physical distance and masks and cleaning. But we're doing this to help reduce the potential of those close contacts that would need to quarantine.
Okay, so communication is going to be really tight. It sounds like you'll have these school liaisons reporting cases, and there will be back and forth communication with the local health department. But who ultimately makes the call to stop in-person instruction if there are too many exposures?
Well, that's where we would we discussed this briefly last night, but that's something from the health department and looking at the data. That would be something that we would work once again in concert with them. If those numbers or if those metrics coming out, we hope there will be some metrics somewhat similar to Minnesota to give us the best possible opportunity so then we can inform our board and make an announcement.
Are students expected to have been tested for COVID before the first day of school?
No, they're not. They're not expected to be tested, nor our staff. This had come up. We had a countywide teachers and staff meeting for the entire county that the Eau Claire City County Health had provided for us on Thursday, and they were able to answer so many questions from our teachers and staff and administration throughout the county, and that was one of the questions that had come up.
You know, in some districts, the window is really tight for teachers to gear up for virtual learning and in-person instruction and then start a school year. Teachers are, in some districts, maybe days before they have to be able to deliver classwork. Will teachers be prepared?
You know, in talking with teachers here in our district, but, I'm very privileged to be married to a teacher. And I know exactly what she's going through right now. My wife, Michelle, she's been a teacher in Wisconsin for 10 years, as well as Minnesota for 10 years. And, that our teachers they're concerned about safety, but they're really concerned about the relationships that they hopefully will be able to make with their students, whether it's virtual or whether it's in person. And teachers want to do a fantastic job in this district, just like they do in so many districts across the state. Teachers want to do their best, and they're disappointed when they're maybe not able to, based on the mode, based on our schedule, based on the offerings and how they are delivered. But once again, we've got to treat these situations with so much grace. Our professional development, our staff development is going to look different this year, just because we want to make sure that the teachers feel that it's okay. It's going to be different, but we're going to work with them and provide that PD, and we're going to help each other out because we're all in it together.
Mike Johnson is superintendent of Eau Claire Area School District. We're talking about how this district is delivering education this fall. Mike, I'm wondering, do you have enough teachers? I mean, with so many different modes of delivery here and how you're having to really bend, if you will, to what families want and what teachers want, do you have enough instructors?
We believe we do. What we've done, I think I mentioned it earlier, in the broadcast, is that that staffing, where sometimes families felt, you know, it's August 5th, we just don't have enough information. Why the early timeline? We needed to get that information to be able to staff. And we're very pleased that I think across the secondary level, we're going to be able to staff fairly easily because we've got people with multiple certifications and can teach different courses, and there's some flexibility there. However, at the elementary level, it's a little bit different. In our district, we chose to have four-day-a-week instruction for first and second grade students. Why? Because first grade we felt was extremely critical for early literacy, early learning foundations, and looking at the curriculum and the outcomes. And second grade, you may ask, well, why them? Well, they lost a quarter of the year last year, so we really needed to ensure that they had that foundation as well. So that's where we're looking for more teachers, but enabled to repurpose staff a bit with the help of our HR department and the work with our principals, especially for 3 days solidly last week. We are very confident that we'll be able to fill those positions.
What resources are there for students who don't have access to a laptop or even reliable internet connection?
We do have, that's one thing that we had done over this summer. We will be going one-to-one where students will have those devices. Obviously, that's a tremendous undertaking in distributing all of those devices, but that's okay. We were able to get that support from our board, and we've taken the funding to be able to do that on a four-year lease for our students, K-12, all the way across the board. So that's one thing. The other thing would be that internet access and surveying and distribution of hotspots for students. That's one thing that we knew that was very critical in the springtime, as it was for many districts around the area. We do have some rural areas where internet access is very difficult, but we also have some people in poverty that they're just not able to afford that. So we're doing the best we can. We've actually received help from our public schools foundation. They're very instrumental in this. And we also have so many generous people across the community who are willing to help as well.
So do you have like a one-to-one ratio then for devices?
Yes, we do. That was our goal for this summer, and we will be able to meet that goal.
Pam from Green Bay called in, couldn't stay with us, but they called to ask about the issue of air ventilation in the buildings. And Pam says that's supposed to be one of the biggest problems in terms of spreading the virus. And Pam wants to know, how is your ventilation in buildings?
Sure. We've learned a lot from our community with health and safety in regard to the ventilation. I've learned about MERV ratings. Didn't really know about that too much until a couple weeks ago. But, you know, we're committed to following the orders in the city and county with our physical distancing and wearing masks and our hand washing. But the order doesn't include guidance for HVAC or MERV ratings. A MERV rating does tell us how effectively our filter traps small particles. And the higher a MERV rating, the higher the amount of particles the filter traps. And, you know, currently we use it 2-inch and 4-inch pleated filter, but we rely on our filter vendor and our engineers when we're determining the best options for the equipment we operate in our buildings to provide that efficiency. But ultimately, you know, with the air quality, in talking with our city and county health, it's about the 6 feet of distance, and it's about those masks. But yes, we've obviously had to get up to speed on MERV ratings and HVAC systems, but that's something that we work very closely with our buildings and grounds director to ensure that everything is up to speed and up to code, and so that it's safe for our staff and for our students.
What happens if a staff member or a teacher is unable to do their job because of the of their own health conditions and the spread? And what do you do then when they can't provide in-person instruction?
Well, absolutely. And that's part of our staffing plan that we had shared last night. You know, we put a survey out to our staff because we do know that there are many staff that have pre-existing conditions. And we reached out to them early last month to be able to see, get a ballpark of how many people are impacted here. And they're very concerned. They've been very forthright with our HR department. And, you know, those ADA accommodations are extremely important to follow. And they're able to share that information with HR. And because we do have so many students in our district, approximately 18% that chose that virtual route, there is an option for them. They don't have to take time off and not teach. They may be healthy, but yet they have these conditions that are documented, or possibly someone in their family, a close contact in their family. And that's the type of thing that we needed to find out from our staff to let them know that that's okay and that we'll provide those options for them.
So they would be the ones in probably providing virtual learning for the students who want the 100% learning online.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If they were to meet those criteria, we would definitely work with them. We have been working with people in our staff to be able to do that.
Well, Superintendent Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Mike Johnson is superintendent of Eau Claire Area School District. Coming up, we talk with the owner of a daycare center. That's after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A quick heads up here on programming. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Democratic National Convention from Milwaukee. It's a mix of virtual events and live events underway. We bring you up to speed. We give you a recap tonight through Thursday night starting at 8 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're looking at daycare amid the pandemic and how one center is operating and expanding for more school-aged children. Parents and caregivers, do you plan to put your child in daycare during virtual learning days? Have you found another option? What are your plans? It is 800-642-1234. Jessica Shuttle owns Altoona Family Child Care Center in Western Wisconsin, offering care for infants through school-age kids. Jessica, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right. So can you introduce us to your child care facility? How is it going during the pandemic?
It has been crazy. We have a facility in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that is licensed for 99 kids. We start as early as 4 weeks of age and go up to 13 years. Right now, with school hopefully starting soon, everybody has just been trying to figure out what to do with the extra days that their kids won't be in school, if they're going to send their kids to school, where their kids are going to be. And that's kind of how we came up with offering, you know, enrichment activities and virtual learning assistance for these kids, because some parents don't want to send them to school. They want to have them do the virtual option, and they work. So they'll end up having to be at daycare with us, and we have teachers who are prepped and ready to help them.
So how do you do this? How do you spread out children age 4 weeks to 13 years of age and make sure that you're abiding by all the public health best practices?
You know, we do our best to social distance. All of our kids that are over the age of 5 wear masks. Some of the other kids try. The parents try, the teachers try. You know, they really do their best. We do have 9 classrooms, so they're split up pretty evenly to try to keep them away from each other as much as possible. As far as like eating meals, we don't have a centralized lunchroom, so all the children are, you know, in their classrooms, eating their lunch, doing their activities in their classrooms. We've even staggered our outside play times so that the classrooms aren't outside at the same time for the kids to mingle.
So how are you communicating with the local health department, and what happens if there is an exposure or an outbreak?
A lot of our communication comes with when we have questions, you know, we'll call. We get a lot of emails, a lot of updates from DHS, from the CDC, guidelines, just, you know, things that they would like us to try and do to do our best to not have an outbreak. If we do have an outbreak, we have to contact the health department. We have to give them a list of all the families that have or could have been affected by this outbreak. And then it goes as far as quarantining and who needs to quarantine and what rooms need to be shut down and what needs to be deep cleaned. And I feel like we have bought every single gallon of bleach we could find in the last few months.
Have you had your doors open throughout the pandemic, or when did you close down at all?
We did not close down. When the order came through for us to drop our capacity to 50 with only 10 staff, we stayed at 50 with 10 staff the entire time until they told us that we could put it back up to 99.
Have you had to deal with any exposures, any outbreaks?
We did have one staff. Thankfully, they had not been on the premise. Other than that, we have not, knock on wood, that we don't have to.
Do you have a waiting list at all, or what is capacity like right now?
Yes, right now we are at full capacity. We do have a waiting list that goes out about 2 years, especially for the infant. Ratios are smaller for infant kids, so we can take less of children under the age of two. And that's why we're looking into another facility.
Wait, 2 year waiting list? I mean,
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Basically, you need to plan that you're going to have a baby to get on the list.
How has it that waiting list changed amid the pandemic? Are you finding there is more interest from school aged families who want the wraparound care for the days that it is virtual learning?
Right. Yes. There have been a lot of emails, a lot of people reaching out to us looking for that. You know, up here, it's mostly Wednesdays. Some kids are going 5 days. Some are going four. Some are going two. And then they have 3 days of virtual learning. Every single school district seems to be different at the moment. And so it's trying to work around everybody's schedules and see where we can fit everybody and still follow all of the guidelines and max group sizes that we have to follow.
You know, daycare centers are often minimum wage jobs that are not staffed by people who have backgrounds in teaching, who have degrees in teaching. Do you feel like you're asking a lot of your staff to help facilitate instruction for these kids on their virtual days?
I do. A lot of our staff do have degrees, whether it's an associate's or a bachelor's in childcare, in psychology. You know, it's kind of a range. We have a few in social work, a lot in development, communication. But yes, I mean, it is asking a lot, especially for them to be here, you know, working through this pandemic side by side with these kids. You know, you have, how do you teach a one-year-old to stand 6 feet away from somebody? I mean, that's not an option, obviously. During the high peaks of COVID, we have been giving wage increases. We've been giving bonuses. We've been doing our best to hang in there with support of our families. Luckily, you know, we were able to get the PPP loan, and that gratefully helped out the facility and keeping the teachers there.
We're talking with Jessica Shuttle, who runs a child care center in Western Wisconsin. We're finding out how her center is operating in the pandemic, taking your questions as well. Families, what does the upcoming school year look like for your child? Are you trying to find and enter a daycare center for wraparound days for the virtual learning? Join in at 800-642-1234 on your plans, on your questions. Jessica, I'm wondering, on those Wednesdays when the Eau Claire Area School District is closed for deep cleaning, I would imagine that families want, you know, to figure out how to find childcare on those days, and that it's really difficult in childcare, though, to offer like a banquet, if you will, of you can pick this day or this day, and mm-hmm. we'll have one here, one here, but maybe not in 2 months or so. That's just not how childcare works. How do you bring more flexibility to the program?
Right. And I mean, we have been doing our best to be flexible. You know, like I said before, we do have ratios that we have to meet. We do have group maxes that we can meet. Our classroom for our school agers is 12 kids that we can have in that classroom. So thankfully, you know, summer was just here. So we do have that open classroom that we usually fill during the year with younger children. And at this point, we're just not going to be able to do that. And we'll be able to enroll 12 kids at this one facility. And maybe somebody will be a Monday, Tuesday, and then somebody will be a Wednesday. Hopefully we can fit all the puzzle pieces together and be as flexible as possible for our families.
It's coming down to the wire. We are just talking with the Eau Claire Area School District Superintendent. Classes start 2 weeks from now, 14 days. Do you feel like you have the pieces in place to be able to offer as much as you can to your to meet the demand?
No, not at all. I feel like we need a much larger facility, which is why we put an offer to purchase on one. Hoping to rush everything through as fast as possible to get it open so that we can help these school agers, help these families. I have a lot of school agers that their parents are scared to send them back to school, which I completely understand. I mean, we don't know. They could go to school for 2 weeks. There could be a huge outbreak and then school is over. Or it could go and everything will be fine. But I mean, parents are worried. So they're coming to me asking for direction. And I only have so much space that I can fill to help them. And so we're just doing our best to try to figure out what the future is going to hold.
You've been talking about masks. Do you have other personal protection equipment that you've been needing to have at your facility?
Gloves. Gloves is another big one that has been really hard to find. Between gloves and masks, we also have hand sanitizer stations that we installed by all the sinks, all the classroom doors, the exit doors. But gloves and masks and shields have been a big part of our daily routines.
When do you use the shields?
Shields are often used when we're serving food to the kids. Or, you know, trying to do some facial expressions with them. Because, I mean, we're teaching these kids different life skills as far as, you know, word pronunciation and, you know, all of the shapes and colors and numbers and letters. And with the babies, you're teaching them their, what's the word I'm looking for? Happy, sad, mad. And it's kind of hard to do that through a mask.
How do you tell the kids what this mask is about when they're seeing their, you know, their center put on these masks and face shields? How do you talk with the kids about it?
Well, at first they were scared, not going to lie. The kids were kind of frightened when the teachers came in having to wear masks. But, you know, talking with them, a lot of kids understand, or they make up their own explanation for it. Some of them are great, but I mean, it's just explaining it to them and being open, saying, you know, that Miss Sarah doesn't want to get sick today. And so she's going to wear a mask and she doesn't want you to get sick. So she just has to cover her face, you know, cover her mouth, cover her cough. However, it's easily understood for them.
Jessica Shuttle owns a childcare center in Altoona. She's explaining how her center is trying to minimize risk with the virus while expanding to take care more school-age children. Is your childcare center seeing an influx of school-age children? Does your facility have enough room for kids? Do you work at a daycare center? How is your center preparing to add more space? Is it possible? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Jessica Shuttle here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Jessica Shuttle. She opened Altoona Family Childcare Center a little over a decade ago. It's in the western part of our state, and she seeks to expand as families with school-aged children need daycare on days when learning will be virtual. How is your family handling logistics with virtual learning this fall? Have you found care other than at home? Can you afford to send your school-aged children to daycare? Are you worried about the spread of the virus and risks to your child's health? It's 800-642-1234. And Jessica Shuttle stays with us. Let's take a call now. Steve is with us from Sun Prairie this morning. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Yeah, this is the type of thing you just can't make up. So the schools are shutting down or going virtual, whatever you want to define it as, because of COVID. So now the parents who want the schools to be open are now sending their kids to daycare facilities. So we're just taking all the kids and moving into a different building. How is that really keeping anyone safer? So playing with the guest thoughts about her ability to keep things safe, but the school's not.
Steve, thanks for the call. Jessica, what insights do you have there, and especially for essential workers who may not have a choice?
Right. And I mean, this has been brought up multiple times, but our biggest thing is we have a percentage, a very, very small percentage of the amount of children that are usually in a public school. Our capacity is 99 split between 9 rooms. And you're looking at elementary schools that, I mean, some of them have 1,200 kids in them.
Yeah. So what happens then if a school shuts down because of exposure or because of a outbreak? How do you plan to handle that situation if a parent wants to then, you know, still continue having that child go to the daycare center?
Right. And we have to meet certain ratios once again. So, I mean, if we're at capacity, we have to say no. We can only have 12 kids in our school age classroom. If we have 12 kids, then we have to turn them away.
Do you find that you have enough communication there with the local districts that you're involved with that if a school is finding that there is an exposure, has to shut down, do you know that you'll have that information of a child who is at that school who may be in your daycare?
Not at all. I don't think that there is. They don't let us know anything.
How do you think communication could be improved so that the contact tracing is there and that you have the information that would limit the virus, limit exposure?
More attention to detail. The letting us know, I mean, they should have on record that this child attends a daycare facility, and most schools don't have that. I mean, they might bus them here, but there's nothing on file that says that they're going to our facility.
So what is your biggest challenge right now as you prepare for schools to open and as you prepare to bring in more school-aged children?
Trying to figure out what the future is going to hold. If, like I said, I mean, we're looking at another property, which is a large dollar amount, and seeing if it's something that we actually need to do or not is kind of a gamble either way.
Childcare itself runs on very thin margins. In a pandemic, what is that like? What impact does it have to your bottom line?
Our budget has very much changed. We have changed to increase our supplies as far as cleaning materials go. Hand sanitizer has become a huge part of our daily routines. Paper towels, you know, making sure that everything is compliant as far as keeping the kids separated as much as possible. But yes, I mean, very small funds, trying to keep costs low so parents can still afford it. It's all been a challenge.
Have you been able to take advantage of any federal grants or the federal stimulus?
We were able to get a PPP loan, which really helped, you know, pay the utilities, increase some staff wages, just help out with some of the little things that we had to do. And DHS also had a grant available for us for March, April, and May, I believe it was, that was also very beneficial to the center.
How did you use it?
Most of it went towards payroll. Payroll is at least 75% of our expenses.
When you look at how you approach the fall, what are you going to be able to offer students by way of the virtual setup? Will they be expected to bring their own laptops, for instance?
A lot of schools are supplying their own laptops for the kids, but we will also have computers available. We have Wi-Fi. We have increased our internet connection speed, gotten a new router, doing everything we can to make it as efficient and effective for these kids as possible.
We're talking with Jessica Shuttle, who owns a childcare center in Western Wisconsin, getting her perspective on daycare centers expanding to meet the needs of care, wraparound care when schools are in virtual instruction. Let's bring in Katie now, joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Katie.
Good morning. I'm wondering about funding relating to this. My husband and I are fluent enough where we are able to not live paycheck to paycheck and be able to get our school-age daughter into a daycare should we choose to. But there are a lot of families, especially in the Eau Claire area, who are working poor. And I'm wondering, is there extra funding for parents or families who are working paycheck to paycheck, living paycheck to paycheck, who now have to afford daycare and the costs associated with daycare?
Katie, thank you for that question. Jessica, what happens with those families?
Right. And I mean, like, we're trying to keep our costs as low as possible for these schoolagers and their families. I also know that DHS sent out a memo 2 days ago stating that anybody who receives state help for their families could be eligible to get daycare assistance full time for their schoolagers to go to daycare.
What about the fees involved with daycare? There's usually an application fee. There you have to, you know, make sure that you're in a set amount of weeks or months before you can unenroll. How have you negotiated that in these uncertain times?
We have family fees. So our families only have to pay $175 enrollment fee, and that is for the entire family. It's not per child. It's not per it's not per year. It's a one-time fee of $75, pays for all their materials basically to get them started. And then we don't have a minimum. So basically what they do is they say 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 4 day, 5 days. They give it to our director and that's what we put them on the schedule for. We have become very, very flexible with our families to help them with that issue.
So what happens if a family unenrolls? Is there any way that they could get their spot back if their situation changes?
Right. And how we do it is they have to give 2 weeks notice, of course, so that we can prepare. But if we fill their spot during the time that they're gone, then they don't have to pay any fees to hold it and are able to come back once they need care again.
Give us a sense of the cost of a week of daycare, you know, between infant, toddler, the younger years.
All right. So basically we do it by days per week and by age. So if you're looking for full-time care for a child under the age of two, 5 days would be $205 a week. And then we go down from there. So 4 days, we charge $185. 3 days, we charge $165. 2 days, $125. And then 1 day is $75.
What would it cost for school-aged children then if they are coming for those Wednesdays or one, maybe 1 to 2 days a week?
Yep, so 1 day for a child age 6 to 12 is $50. 2 days would be $75. 3 days would be $115. 4 days would be $145. And 5 days would be $165.
Well, Jessica, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Jessica Shuttle owns Altoona Family Child Care Center in Western Wisconsin. Just ahead, we discuss the QAnon conspiracy theory, how it's drifted into mainstream politics. What questions do you have about QAnon? Do you understand it? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.